chapter 19 this morning as we're looking at lessons from a king. 2 Kings chapter 19. If you were to list some of the greatest battles in history, you would probably list some that you're familiar with and some that you're not so familiar with. As I was researching the greatest battles in history, one of the greatest battles in history was a battle that took place between the British and Afghan warriors back in 1897. It seems like Afghanistan has been the center of many battles throughout history, but some of the greatest battles that have ever taken place have been with Afghan tribesmen against various invaders in history. You've probably never heard of it. Another battle that might be on your list that you might have heard of was the Battle of Waterloo during the Napoleonic Wars, fought in 1815. You might include the battle between the Greeks and the Persians, maybe some of the great battles from World War II. One of the greatest battles ever fought in history was fought by the Kingdom of Vienna against the Ottoman Empire in the 1600s, which stopped the Ottoman Empire and the Muslims from entering into Europe. You might even list the Battle of Gettysburg. There have been no lack of great battles throughout human history. In our study of King Hezekiah in 2 Kings, Hezekiah faced his own great battle. Hezekiah was a king in Jerusalem. Most of his empire had already fallen to the Assyrians. He was surrounded by the Assyrian army, the largest and greatest army in human history at that point in time. By most historical accounts, the army of the Assyrians numbered in the hundreds of thousands. We don't know the size of Hezekiah's army, but as I showed you on the map last Sunday, his empire was a very, very small empire in comparison to the Assyrian empire, and certainly the army of Judah was no match for the army of Assyria. And the king of Assyria, a guy by the name of King Sennacherib, don't ever name your child Sennacherib. That's such a bad name. He threatened to do to Jerusalem what he had done to all of the other walled towns around in Judah, and that was to destroy the city and take the people away captive. And in Sennacherib's mind, even the God of Judah was no match for him and his armies. If you were to look at chapter 19 and verse 10, you would hear words like this: "Don't let your God in whom you trust deceive you, saying Jerusalem shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria." Let me set the stage for you a little bit more. Hezekiah and his army are trapped inside of the city of Jerusalem. Sennacherib and his army are on the outside of the walls. Jerusalem is surrounded, and no one is coming to help them. The battle is about to take place. Sennacherib has pleaded with Hezekiah several times, has threatened Hezekiah. He has told Hezekiah to surrender. He's given him every opportunity, and his patience has reached its limit, and he is ready to attack the city of Jerusalem. And Hezekiah knows that he is no match for Sennacherib. And so he did the only thing he could do. He went into the temple, and he took a letter that Sennacherib had sent to him, telling him to surrender and all the things that would happen to them if they didn't surrender, and he spread it out before God, and he asked God to intervene and to save the nation. And as we will see in the section today, that's exactly what God does. No battle takes place. There is no war. I want to look with you at 2 Kings 19 today, starting with verse 20 and going through the end of the chapter. And if you're using a pew Bible, and if you didn't bring one, I encourage you just to reach in front of you and take one of those Bibles out of the pew. You should find this story somewhere around page 269. We're calling this today the greatest battle that never happened. And one thing that Hezekiah learns from this experience, and it's the one thing that I want you to walk away with today, is that God is greater than any problem that you will face in life. You think you have problems. You haven't looked over the wall at over 100,000 Assyrian soldiers who were known as fierce warriors, who gave no quarter, they gave no opportunity, they totally annihilated whoever stood in their way. And this is not from the Bible. This is from secular sources. We all have problems in life. Some are small problems. Some are big problems. Some we can get through. Some threaten to crush us. But the one thing that you should never forget, if you are a Christian, if you are a child of God, God is greater than any problem that you are going to face in life. You don't agree with me. That was feeble. Let's look at the story. There are two sections to the story. The first one is God versus Sennacherib. And that's really the battle here. The battle is not so much Hezekiah versus Sennacherib. The battle is really God versus Sennacherib. Sennacherib made that clear when he made the issue about God back in verse 10 and following. He made the God of Judah, the Creator God, the sovereign God of the universe, the sovereign God over this world, just like the other gods of wood and stone, gods that he had crushed. And he will crush the real God, just like he had crushed every other god that got in his way. Have the gods of the nations delivered those whom my fathers have destroyed? The implication being that no, there wasn't a god who had the power to stand before the might of Sennacherib, and your God Hezekiah is no different. But he overestimated who he was, and he underestimated who God is. In verses 20 through 24, we have God's reply to Hezekiah. And there are three things that God brings out. Sennacherib had spoken to anyone who heard him what were really great and mighty words. Think back in our study at some of the things that Sennacherib has said as we look at God's word versus Sennacherib's word. Sennacherib had said, "I am the greatest." Remind you of somebody? You that are older, a boxer. "I am the greatest." It wasn't original with Muhammad Ali. "God won't help you. Don't trust your God. The Lord won't," or the implication is, "can't deliver you. God is lying to you. Your God is just like all of the other gods." These are the things Sennacherib has said. His words were great and they were mighty, but they were empty. And in response to Sennacherib's words, I want you to look at God's words. Verse 20, then Isaiah, the son of Amos, sent to Hezekiah saying, here's what God says. Because you have prayed to me against Sennacherib, king of Assyria, I have heard. This is the word which the Lord has spoken about Sennacherib. The virgin, the daughter of Zion, has despised you, laughed you to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem has shaken her head behind your back. Whom have you reproached and blasphemed? Against whom have you raised your voice and lifted up your eyes on high? Against the Holy One of Israel. Verse 21 is a delicate verse. We often shy away from the more delicate and graphic portions of the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, but God doesn't. When God referred to Judah as the virgin daughter of Zion, he is painting a very graphic picture for us here. And if this embarrasses you, I apologize this morning. Judah is like the helpless young virgin. Assyria is the big, swaggering bully who wants to have his way with her, but she turns the tables and laughs at his lack of manliness. Can I put it that way? And she mocks his virility. And he slinks away in humiliation. There is nothing more humiliating for a man than to have a woman laugh at his manliness or lack thereof. It will cause him embarrassment. It will cause him to hide in shame. And God says to Sennacherib, you aren't the man you think you are. And Judah will laugh at your manliness. Because you have blasphemed the God of heaven. Sennacherib's words were mighty. God's were mightier. I like what one commentator said. He said, Sennacherib has spoken to Hezekiah concerning the Lord. Hezekiah has spoken to the Lord concerning Sennacherib. Now the Lord speaks to Hezekiah concerning Sennacherib. It is always this last account that matters. God has the final word on our nature and destiny. We may say what we wish about him. Others may say what they wish about us. But it is what God says about you and me, which is of the utmost importance. He goes on to say, Sennacherib may style himself world ruler. He may terrify his small neighbors, but it is the God of one of the least of these who will close the book on who Sennacherib really is. That's powerful. And in God's sight, Sennacherib's words meant nothing. The second thing that we see in God's speech is God's power versus Sennacherib's power. Verse 23. By your messenger, Sennacherib, you have reproached the Lord and said, by the multitude of my chariots, I have come up to the height of the mountains, to the limits of Lebanon. I will cut down his tall cedars and his choice cypress trees. I will enter the extremity of its borders to its fruitful forest. I have dug and drunk strange water, and with the soles of my feet I have dried up all the brooks of defense. Did you not hear long ago how, now God speaking of himself, I made it? From ancient times I formed it? Now I have brought it to pass that you should be for crushing fortified cities into heaps of ruins. Therefore their inhabitants had little power. They were dismayed and confounded. They were as grass of the field and the green herb, as the grass on the housetops and grain blighted before it is grown. But I know your dwelling place. You're going out and you're coming in, and your rage against me. Because your rage against me and your tumult have come up to my ears, therefore I will put my hook in your nose and my bridle in your lips, and I will turn you back by the way which you came. Now in this passage, God is contrasting his power versus Sennacherib's power. Basically, what he is saying was, as he refers to Sennacherib in verses 23 and 24, he's saying that nothing could stop Sennacherib. Not the mountains. His chariots would go over them. And by the way, at this point in history, the chariot has become the new modern weapon in the world. It has changed the dynamics of warfare. And the Assyrians had a huge fleet of chariots that they took everywhere with them. Now, if you've tried to drive a chariot on flat land, you're in good shape. But if you try to drive it over the mountains, that's a little hard. Even the mountains could not stop the chariots of Assyria. Not even the forests of Lebanon. He would just cut them down. Not the deserts. He would dig walls or wells, and he would find water. Not the rivers that were used as systems of defense, especially for Egypt, that was protected by the Nile and other rivers. They would dry up like dry land before the Assyrians. There was nothing that could stop the Assyrian army. That's what Sennacherib said. That's what he believed. In his mind, he was the mightiest king in the world, but he wasn't God. And so God replies to remind Hezekiah of who he is. And in verse 25 through 28, he tells Hezekiah who he is. He is the Creator God. From ancient times, I formed it. He is the sovereign God, in verses 25 and 26, who has brought Sennacherib to power to accomplish his purpose. He is the one, in verse 26, who gives power to the kings. He is the one, in verse 27, who knows even the heart of the king. He even knows when the king rages against him. And because God's power is real, and Sennacherib's power, listen, Sennacherib's power is a derived power, derived from God. Because God's power is real, and Sennacherib's power is a derived power, God is going to put a bit in his mouth and a bridle on him, and he's going to turn him around like a horse. And he's going to go back the same way he came. Never forget the power that you have. You have been given power by God. It is a derived power. And like Sennacherib, you will answer to God how you use it.